Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Union Bank and Trust, with hardship loans and special considerations to help customers through these uncertain times. The people of UBT are here for Nebraskans and available by phone anytime. Member FDIC. Support for programming also comes from Max Creek Winery, celebrating 20 years of winemaking in Lexington with a commitment to sustainability. Max Creek offers wines, hard cider, craft beer on tap, and patio seating overlooking the vineyards, with weekend hours and curbside delivery. MaxCreek.com. Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Much of today's show is pre-recorded as we continue to protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19. I'm Genevieve Randall. We'll hear a Nebraska artist later with some Christmas music. NET's William Padmore will tell us more about a unique project that encourages exploration of our capital city. And Lincoln Symphony Orchestra opens their season this weekend just in time for seasonal music. We start our show this week with Hans Sturm, who is many things, but here this week he's in his role as Meadowlark Music Festival Executive Director. And in this very unusual year, he is here to talk about a series of Meadowlark performances happening at a somewhat unusual time in the calendar for Meadowlark. It's great to see you, Hans.
Great to see you, Genevieve. So happy to be here.
Usually Meadowlark would be in the summer, right?
Yes. Would be in July when things are starting to heat up and we'd be outdoors and enjoying a glass of wine and listening to some music,
yeah.
Or in one of the terrific venues that we have in the Lincoln area, listening to some very cool chamber music. But, of course, we can't do that right now.
Concerts actually started already as of our discussion here this morning, November 28th, which I know is past, but I want to ask you about that one because the pianist who played shares your last name. His name is Fred Sturm.
I know. Isn't that cool? So there are a couple of Fred Sturms. There's a Fred Sturm who's a great jazz composer and who died not too terribly long ago, and he and I were very good friends, and we taught together and so on. We were not related. This Fred Sturm, however, is related to me, is my first cousin, my father's older brother's son. Fred is an amazing pianist, very creative person. He makes his living as a piano technician, rebuilding pianos. He came to Lincoln not too long ago to give a presentation to the piano technicians here because he'd done a bunch of work. And Paul Williams, who was the piano tech at the time, called me up and said, "Do you know Fred Sturm? Are you related to Fred Sturm?" I was like, "You mean the jazz guy?" "No, I'm not related to him." He says, "No, actually the piano tech guy." And I was like, "Oh, yes." So Fred has a great passion for the 20th century piano music of Latin America. And these are pieces that are incredible to play because there's so many layers of rhythms, middle ground, foreground, background. And so he gave a concert of 20th century Latin piano music on Saturday evening. And he spoke about each of the pieces in some detail and shared, oh, listen for this theme and listen for that theme, so that it didn't kind of hit you as being like this super bright, vibrant, colorful, rhythmically complex piece that you don't quite have a handle on,
right,
but actually broke each one down.
The remaining concerts are all at 7:30 p.m. They're all on Saturdays, right?
That's correct.
So one of them is tomorrow, December 5th, then December 12th and 19th. Tell us about the artists coming up and what kind of music they specialize in.
Coming up this Saturday is Ensemble Iberica. Ensemble Iberica, from the name Iberica, we think of the Iberian Peninsula. We think about Spain and Portugal. But in this particular instance, they've embraced the music of Turkey. They went on a retreat as an ensemble to the Ozarks in Arkansas along the White River and developed a new set of repertoire, and they share with us this repertoire as part of that concert. So that's going to be very exciting. That's violin, cello, guitars of a variety of flavors, a soprano saxophone, and percussion, a dumbek, which will be a lot of fun. The week after that will be the 12th, and that will be our Meadowlark Jazz Summit. We got the group together at the Jewel in Omaha. And so we brought down Justin Kaiser. Some may know the name. Ryan Kaiser is the lead trumpet player of the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra. Justin is his younger brother, who played with the Navy Commodores, the premier Navy band, also with Nora Jones, and studied at Juilliard with Wynton Marsalis.
Wow.
So he played trumpet with Andrew Janik from Omaha, terrific tenor player, Mitch Town, a Grammy-nominated organist, and David Hawkins. And so they play two sets of standard tunes, organ, drums, trumpet, and tenor. And then our final evening will be on the 19th, Simon Prolix and Etienne LaFrance. Simon is a terrific folk guitarist, but also a studio musician. He can read and play anything. So he's a big shot on the in Quebec and the Montreal jazz scene and folk scene, and tours Europe regularly. And then he's joined by Etienne LaFrance. Etienne is one of my favorite people for a long time. He's a bass player that I've known for forever and ever. He was the co-principal of the Quebec Symphony Orchestra, and but also loves folk music and loves to improvise. And so the two of them have put together an evening of music at an art gallery. They're just marvelous, high-energy musicians. And so expect music that, speaking about the Genevieve's The Verge, that crosses between classical music, jazz, and folk music. That will be a lot of fun.
The way this is working for you guys to watch them is that a person has to be on your mailing list, and then they get sent a unique link so that you can watch, right? I saw that on the Meadowlark website. So we'll have a link to the Meadowlark website on the Friday Live page. For Meadowlark, what was important about providing this series right now?
We wanted to get something going. We really did. And we were fortunate enough to receive a grant from the Nebraska Arts Council, a COVID CARES grant, and also support from the Cooper Foundation. Because of that, we were able to sponsor these concerts. These concerts are free. Part of the reason why this was so important to us at this particular juncture is next year is Meadowlark's 20th anniversary. We would like to have a Meadowlark's 20th anniversary celebration and party and stay viable. So this is a way that we can share something, stay in the public's eye. Hopefully you'll remember us for end of year giving and for next season, when we hope that all of this is behind us. But I got to say, even if it's not, it has forced us to engage in new ways and become very, 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 very creative in the ways that we present music and do things. The nice thing about this particular platform is you can be anywhere and participate in this concert, and the artists are zooming in, and you can ask questions and interact with them in a very personal way that you would not be able to at a normal concert.
Yeah, that interactive element has been really something. And the fact that, I mean, Meadowlark does do concerts sort of in a circle around Lincoln and out in different parts of the state. There's been concerts in the center of the state, right?
Sure.
In Grand Island. But anybody, anywhere in the world even, could see these concerts.
Since I've been involved for the past 8 years, we've had artists from Italy, France, Russia, Greece, Turkey, Argentina coming and performing at Meadowlark. And so there are people on our mailing lists who live in other countries and have tuned in to see what's happening. And that's just terrific. We just had one so far, but we're looking forward to expanding the audience and seeing who shows up.
Hans Sturm is executive director of the Meadowlark Music Festival. Their virtual concerts continue tomorrow on December 12th and the 19th. All of those are at 7:30 p.m. Hans, again, it's really great to see you.
Oh, Genevieve, it's great to see you too.
And be well.
Yes. Thank you.
You're listening to Friday Live, serving your community wherever that might be. This is NET Radio, streaming online at netnebraska.org. I'm joined next here in the NET studios by someone who was asked to be guest conductor for a Lincoln Symphony Orchestra concert. They are opening their season with a holiday traditional concert called Deck the Halls. Now, that is this Sunday, December 6th, with two options for streaming it live. So who's the guest conductor? Well, it's Tom Trenny. Tom, welcome back to Friday Live this week.
Good morning, Genevieve.
It's great
nice to see you again.
Yeah, right? So people are used to hearing you in association with events for Auburn Music or Nebraska Wesleyan. So how did it come to be that you were asked to conduct the symphony?
I think in one word, it took a pandemic to make this tenable and possible and practical. But of course, I feel so privileged to have been invited. I have had a chance to make music with the symphony in other ways, preparing some of the choruses for some of the choral orchestral pieces and playing the organ for the Samuel Barber Toccata Festival one time. But this was my first time to conduct the orchestra. But I realized as I was there, especially with the smaller instrumentation, you know, pandemic style, that a lot of those were friends that had played with me in programs we do at Plymouth and with Auburn Music. So it was really a beautiful time to see people. And it was the first time that a lot of them had played together for several months, and so it was a very special experience to get back together.
Roughly 16 players, is that right, or do you remember?
I think it was in the low 20s.
In the low 20s.
22 or 4, something in there. So,
you know, with your strong choral background, Tom, I wonder if you could talk about, as a conductor, is it different? Do you think of that choir or that orchestra as different instruments in a way?
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the things that fascinates me so much about choral music is the story that we tell, the text that we draw. And in instrumental music, of course, growing up playing piano and an organ, you think about things differently. You have to create a story with just the notes and rhythms and the shapes and the lines and the dynamics and those sorts of things. So it is fascinating to have an opportunity to work with instrumentalists, especially that are so beautiful in playing and in interacting as they. So the opportunity was really fun and meaningful.
That's great. Well, you know, I got some notes from LSO's executive director, Barbara Zock. They had been watching the numbers as they were trying to make decisions about opening their season, watching the risk levels and, you know, trying to figure out how to gather together their musicians, you and the guest soloist. And they did this in kind of short notice. So once you guys were together there in the lead center, I'm wondering if you could kind of put us there a little bit. Were there protocols for safety?
Yes, absolutely. Our original idea was to live stream this coming week, you know, and potentially to have actual small audiences spread out as it was happening. But early November, Barbara said, how would you feel about doing the concert next week? And so fortunately for most of us musicians, we're not getting as much work. I don't know if that's fortunate, but we were available at kind of a moment's notice to gather. And as we got there, we, of course, all wore masks throughout the time. Even Drew did as a singer. I did as the conductor. Mm-hmm. We were spaced out pretty far from one another, which worked beautifully, but was a new experience for the musicians. You know, they hadn't really, for the most part, had an opportunity to do that before. And the winds and there were just two wind players and one brass player, and they were even further from afield from us. So it was, I think, very thoughtfully arranged by the symphony, and as far as we could tell, did keep others safe.
So. Yeah. It's interesting for me to think about when I see pictures or hear folks talk about what they've done to make this happen. As you talk about the wind players being far apart, I think back to rehearsals I've been in where someone is saying, no, you two switch places, and there was so much emphasis on how you're hearing the sound, listening across the ensemble, and that's just so different now.
It is, and the same thing's true. I've been telling my students this year at school, the choir students, you know, we keep reminding ourselves as much as we're growing this year, nobody ever stood this far from their singing neighbors before. Nobody ever got this spread out before. Nobody ever sang with masks before. And look what we can still do in spite of all of that. In some ways, it's encouraged us to have to be more self-sufficient and to take more initiative And to do our part with more conviction. And I really did feel that happen. People were just grateful to be in the same room, albeit in a new way, to make music together.
Now, you hinted a moment ago by dropping the first name of the special guest soloist that is on this concert. So let's talk about that person. And full disclosure, Drew Duncan, who is the soloist, also works for NET in our development department. So do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about him?
Yeah, Drew Duncan is such a fine, fine tenor. He moved to Omaha some years ago, and I got to meet him when he lived there. Then he moved to Lincoln. I worked with him at First Plymouth and Ovid Music for a few years before he came to NET, and I was really thankful that, by coincidence, I think, he and I both were invited to do this program, and we had the chance to work together before. So here, in this program, he sings an arrangement of It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas, which, of course, growing up in an easy listening household, as I like to describe it, I heard that one a lot with Andy Williams and and those Perry Como and those kinds of singers, you know.
Absolutely.
And also, he sings Oh Holy Night, which is such a tender piece that actually is the final piece on the program, kind of a beautiful, peaceful blessing. So it was great to have that, to have Drew there to add another expressive element to the palette.
When Oh Holy Night is on a program like this, I just don't see any other way to end it than that one, really. There's nothing that can come after that.
Yeah, it's a real heart piece, isn't it?
Well, you know, I wonder, thinking about these things, anyone anywhere can access these online streams. They won't be available after, so this is a special experience at each of those two times. But thinking of that tech, I wonder if going forward, if this will maybe change how we present concerts.
Yes, I mean, I think it is something for us all to consider, because one thing I can say is, from the perspective that in the world I live in, I think we've had a chance to reach more people this year. Now, and I would argue it's a time where more people need to be reached with the healing power of music than before. And so to have the opportunity to gather in person and to be able to share with people who may not feel comfortable going or who may not be able practically to attend. Well, just think about what vistas that opens up for us in the future. And so we're all getting practice at it right now, whether we like it or not, just to keep
it's
going.
It's true. Yeah. Well, I've been talking here with Tom Trenny, who is a guest conductor for this year's Deck the Halls concert, which was pre-recorded with Lincoln's Symphony Orchestra. That concert will be presented virtually at two different times. It is a ticketed event that streams live, and if you need more information about how to access that, we have a link right on the Friday Live page, so I'll give you that web address here in a moment. And again, those concerts are 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. this Sunday. Tom, as always, great chatting with you.
Thank you for having me. Blessings.
And again, this opens the 2020-21 season for Lincoln Symphony Orchestra with 5 classical concerts, 1 pops concert, and 2 family concerts planned. To learn more about this or anything on this morning's program, find the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. While you're there, check out our complete list of holiday specials, including concerts like that one from local performers on Nebraska Concerts. Now, if you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and you wish that you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like online as well, or download it. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or again on our website, that address, netnebraska.org. Residents and tourists alike are being encouraged to explore Lincoln by taking part in interactive audio stories whose plots and characters are revealed through geolocation. The stories were written, produced, and voiced by students from UNL's Johnny Carson Center for Emerging Media Arts. NET's William Padmore talked with some of the minds behind the project.
Imagine you're new to the Lincoln area, and you're waiting at the corner of 9th and O Street. You're bored, and you see on your phone your location is tied to an interactive story that promises to not only entertain, but also show you around. You put in your headphones, open an app, and suddenly you get a message.
Welcome. We're glad you've decided to join us. We've had an eye on you for some time now. You will be an excellent addition to our team at the Punctuation Corporation. But first, you must prove yourself to be valuable.
Did you ever watch Spy Kids when you were younger? Yeah, so I always wanted to kind of be a secret agent.
Hannah Peterson is a freshman at the Johnny Carson Center for Emerging Media Arts and says that's the basic idea of the Story City Projects, interactive audio stories created by 38 UNL students as part of the center's Story Lab 1 class.
We were assigned to use the Echoes app and create certain sounds to tell a story. And Echoes is an app based on geolocation. And so when you go inside a certain area, then the sounds start to play.
We hope you found everything well. Your final task is a couple blocks away. To get there, listen carefully. To begin, head in the opposite direction of the train station on Q Street.
While Peterson's Echo story focuses on the realm of super spies, her classmates took different approaches, from bank heists to historical walkthroughs. She warns some of the more interactive parts of the stories may be on hold due to the pandemic. One part of her own story would have had the listener interact with a local business that agreed to take part.
Currently, due to the circumstances, our tribal's business is only open like certain days of the week, but had there not been a pandemic, you could run it now.
While Peterson's story, titled The Audition, may be out of commission for now, several other stories created by her classmates are designed to be experienced all year round, pandemic or no.
We look forward to working with you and congratulate you on your promotion to agent in the Punctuation Corporation.
Ash Smith is an assistant professor at the Carson Center and assigned to the Story City Project.
A lot of my work has been really thinking about cities and the civic imagination, how we can reimagine cities and space and place around us.
Before working at UNL, Smith was involved in a similar project at the University of California, where she explored ways to tell unique stories about the southern border.
In this case, like here in Lincoln, I would say, being new here, I've only been here for about a year now. And, you know, place is definitely my entry point in terms of making art. And I really want to know this place better. And I want to know, you know, not just recent histories or present kind of moment, but also thinking back all the way, you know, more deep time, geological, to indigenous histories, to the prairie homesteaders, et cetera. And then also at the same time, can we project ourselves forward?
Smith says the project's location-based premise emphasizes that goal.
And so this medium of geolocation helps us take a place that, yes, is using GPS to orient us at a place on a street corner. However, on that street corner, we could look all the way back to the past and all the way to the future and to the present and kind of almost time travel through a set of coordinates.
As a form of entertainment, Smith says the project allows for accessible fun.
A lot of people right now, too, during COVID-19, being kind of, you know, lots of time in the screens, are kind of seeking out more podcasts, more radios, more ways to kind of listen, more ways to think about how we can, and then as an artist, how can you use that medium and the affordances of it, where you don't actually have to build the model or the 3D science fiction story. You can actually do it with voice and sound, and you can bring that to life.
While this was the first year she assigned the project, it won't be the last. For more information on the Story City projects, head to netnebraska.org. I'm William Padmore for Friday Live.
You're listening to Friday Live here on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Producer Brandy Weber says she couldn't have done the new NET documentary, Nebraska Spirit, Go Big Red, without the aid of a book by former Nebraska cheerleader.
Deb White wrote a book, The Spirit of Nebraska. She spent 15 years researching it, 5 years writing it. There's a lot of history in our show, but her book has a lot more history on all of the areas.
Listen to a conversation about that documentary between NET's Brandy Weber and William Padmore on this week's Friday Live Extra. Download wherever you get your podcasts or listen on our website at netnebraska.org/radio. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website. There are online-only or other socially distant events there, in addition to some in-person events. Feel free to submit your own arts or humanities event. The address to find events or add your own is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. Constellation Studios in Lincoln hosts a holiday show this month that opens tonight from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The old Avoca Schoolhouse is streaming an event called Harmonica Holiday. Those who register can learn popular traditional holiday tunes and harmonica techniques. And the Little Red Hen Theater in Wakefield presents an adaptation of the classic story, A Christmas Carol, that opens tonight at 7 p.m. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture. On the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Support for programming on NET Radio also comes from History Nebraska, recognizing everyday Nebraskans who do their part to preserve and share Nebraska's stories. The history of Nebraska belongs to the people. To learn more, history.nebraska.gov. State poets before Matt Mason, the state poet was William Clefcorn, longtime professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. Clefcorn recorded a poetry series for NET Radio called Poetry of the Plains until he died in 2011. From that series, he reads one of his unpublished poems from 2011.
I'm going to read a poem that I wrote for an occasion, and the occasion was one of my granddaughters graduating from the University of Nebraska, and I wanted to write a poem for her. And I especially wanted to write it because I was in no condition at the time to attend the ceremony. And I regretted that, but I still wanted to, do something, even if it was the wrong thing. So I determined to attempt a poem. I call the poem Upon the Occasion, and then I follow it with an epigraph of Jamie Lynn Hansen's graduation from the University of Nebraska, Saturday, December 18, 2010, Upon the Occasion. Each morning, with the parting of the curtains, the world reappears, twig and leaf and cloud, and a red squirrel, having moved swift as the wind atop a slat-boarded fence, pauses and cocks its head as if wondering about the location of its most recently buried acorn. Later today, my granddaughter, Jamie, in cap and gown, will move across a stage to receive permission to move on. She will have heard a speech delivered by an astronaut telling her of worlds much larger than a plate glass window, realms that, viewed from a proper distance and in spite of fire and flood, plagues and wars and untold maledictions, are beyond beautiful. And though I'll not be there to hear his words, I'll know them. Space and challenge and horizon, risk and duty, more mysteries under anybody's heaven than our pitiful earthbound philosophies can conceive of. Now, Jamie, hear me. It was your own grandmother's not so distant hand that so beautifully pulled the cord that parted the curtains to define, then extend, our world. Those many times on the soccer field, your swift and persistent strides, those nights on the court with one hand tending the ball as your fingers on the other smoothed back a wisp of hair. That brightness your bright eyes assume each time you greet your sister, your mother, your father. The poise you will muster to cross the stage. And now, just now, that bird beyond the window at the feeder, its delicate feathers ruffled, as if to nurture and to fulfill them by the wind.
We heard the late Bill Clefcorn reading Upon the Occasion, one of his unpublished poems. This is Friday Live on listener-supported NET Radio, streaming online at netnebraska.org. Ahead in about 11 minutes, William Padmore has a discussion about an online visual arts display. If you have young readers on your holiday gift list but aren't confident you know what to choose for their age group, we have you covered. All About Books host Pat Leach invited the expert on this week's show. Vicki Wood, a youth services librarian, has great ideas for kids of all ages.
I know that a lot of children prefer something that's not fiction, want something more informational, something that would be nonfiction. What do you have for that group of children?
This is a beautiful, it's a small, slim book, but it's very beautiful. It's called The Solar System by the Numbers. And it's by Steve Jenkins. And Steve Jenkins is an amazing writer for children. He writes lots of books about science and science concepts.
To learn about all of the great books for young readers, go to our website, netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. I'm joined next here on Friday Live by singer-songwriter Andrea Von Campen, who's got some new holiday music out. One song is an original for the holidays that will be part of our Friday Live Christmas and Solstice special, which is coming up in just 2 weeks from today. Now, another track we will hear right after we talk with Von Campen. She's also streaming some concerts online for the holidays, titled the same as her new release, A Midwest Christmas. I can't wait to learn more, and it's great to see you, Andrea.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, the live stream concerts, that's on your Facebook, your Instagram, and your YouTube pages,
yeah.
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How are you?
Perfect.
I was going to say. How are you managing all the tech for that?
We have found an app, and we have done some sound checking and some rehearsals with it, and we're good to go. So, yeah, it's every Friday from now until the 18th.
And I see from your website you have some special guests for those.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that?
Yeah, well, tonight is my brother David, and the next week is my trio that I play with, Jessica Hansen and Stephen Cantorero, and then the last week I'll be partnering with the People City Mission.
You know, someday I think I'm going to have Stephen Cantorero on the show. I think he's mentioned by almost every musician that comes on here.
Yeah,
I'm like, how many bands does Stephen play with? So funny. Well, now the cover that we'll hear in a few minutes is What Child Is This? How did you decide to record that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that song lends itself so well to folk music. Like, the melody is beautiful, and I'd never covered that before. And then, you know, David and I kind of started working on the arrangement and just felt like, oh, this is exactly what we want to do. So that was sort of all it took to record it.
It occurs to me having a brother who's an arranger composer could be an advantage or a disadvantage.
I've decided it's an advantage.
Okay, good.
I don't fight it.
Now, do you have other favorite Christmas songs, things that you'd like to cover at some point?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I love Christmas music. Like, I'm such a sucker for it, and I think earlier the better. So I have a lot of ideas in the works.
Are there things you'd rather play and things you'd rather listen to and not play?
That's such an interesting question. I think I like both, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I love listening to other people's versions, but I'm always excited to play a lot of Christmas music.
Now, as a tease for the show that we are airing on NET 2 weeks from now, mm-hmm. the original Christmas tune that you wrote is A Midwest Christmas, and it opens up with just this hello with your voice completely in the clear before the guitar comes in, and the next word is again, which right away off the bat I'm hooked in, because it feels kind of lonely at first considering the times,
mm-hmm.
until we then get to Winter, My Friend. And you've brought me through this roller coaster already, and we've gotten maybe five words.
Well, you know, like when it snows for the first time and you're like, oh, this, like, it's been a while. And you're sort of like, hey.
That is true.
That's sort of what I was thinking of when I wrote that.
Well, you've got lots of imagery in there, like the guy who tells you there's an icy street ahead.
There's always one, right?
There's
every
one.
Season. ma'am?
Yeah. Yeah. Just so you know, there's an icy patch ahead. That's right. It's so nice. Do you feel like that's particularly Midwest?
Absolutely.
Which is the title.
That's like... I think that imagery is just exactly what I experience every year. Like, there's just something so magical about the Midwest, and I think that people really do care for each other. And so I was sort of, you know, trying to depict that in the song while also sort of showing kind of the funniness of it, too.
It's true. It's very true. Well, I can't wait to hear that song 2 weeks from now on Friday Live. That's the newest release from Andrea Von Campen, A Midwest Christmas. Be sure to join us for that show on December 18th to hear it as part of our Christmas and Solstice special. We'll hear Andrea sing another holiday tune here in a moment, and she's also streaming concerts online. There's one tonight and one a week from today, and we'll have a link to more on the Friday Live page. Andrea, Merry Christmas and Holly, happy holidays to you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, now here is Andrea Von Campen's cover of What Child Is This? Here on NET Radio's Friday Live.
What child is this who lay to rest on Mary's lap is sleeping, whom angels greet?
What Child Is This? That was Nebraska singer-songwriter Andrea Von Campen here on Friday Live. Be sure to stay with us. There's poetry and song from Deb Carpenter Nolting of Bushnell, Nebraska. That's coming up in about 6 minutes.
I'm William Padmore. Next here on Friday Live, I'm joined by the director of the Eisentrager Howard Gallery, Patricia Davis. The gallery is on the University of Nebraska Lincoln City campus and usually hosts student artwork exhibitions right about now, along with the neighboring Richards Hall. This year is different, however, because of, well, but Davis is here to tell us about how they've made it possible for art students to still have their work on display. Welcome to this week's Friday Live, Patricia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. The artwork is virtual this year, from what I understand. How can people access it?
So this particular exhibition is virtual, mm-hmm. the Capstone exhibition, and they can access it through unlcapstone.com.
How have the students and faculty adapted to this very unusual year? And is there any sort of silver linings upside to any of it?
I think the upside of it is that it is challenging us as creatives to think outside the box, literally, like outside the gallery space. It makes us push our work that much harder because we're thinking not only about the work that we feel essential to make to communicate to the world, but how do we want people to interact with that work? How do we create moments of accessibility?
Do you think that there's anything lost in the virtual versus in-person interaction with artwork like this, or do you think the emotions can still be achieved?
Maybe more of a subjective situation than we're willing to admit, since we're so used to having this physical space that's about looking in person, you know, and going up. Sometimes we can touch that work. Sometimes we're meant to hear things and see and touch all at the same time. It just depends on the artist's work. Some works are better meant to be seen virtually, whether it's something that's more created digitally, seeing it from a screen in your personal space versus being in front of other people and having to witness or experience that information. Because I run a physical gallery and I'm very hands-on sort of learner and educator, I will always advocate for that physical interaction. But that doesn't mean that I'm opposed to the virtual. I think there's a place for both of them, and we are definitely quickly approaching that sort of experience.
The artwork itself, who's creating it and why? Or in other words, how does it fit into the student's class and work requirements?
For the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and the School of Art, Art History, and Design, these students are BFA and BA majors. So that means a Bachelor of Fine Arts or a Bachelor of Arts. So it could mean that they're an art major but have a minor in some other area, or that they are only focusing on the arts. They are undergraduate students, and they could be in any of the six studio or design-based areas. So that might mean ceramics, printmaking, sculpture, painting, photography, graphic design and illustration, painting and drawing. Our other area of study would be art history. So this semester we didn't have any art history majors graduating.
Is there a favorite piece that sticks out in your mind that's like, oh, wow, people really need to see that?
I can't say that I have a favorite, in all honesty. And that's not me just trying to be the diplomat. It's so interesting. Every time you get a new group of students in this exhibition, I feel like I'm constantly challenged, but also just they teach you things, too. And these aren't my students personally. So they have to take a course that's called the Capstone course.
Sure.
So they have individual instructors that work to teach them through that. So a lot of professional practices, experiences happen, as well as them like sort of finessing, refining that body of work that they're going to display. So I'm one of the coordinators that works with those instructors.
Cool.
So
what kinds of mediums and subject matter are seen in the collections?
So there's a little bit of everything right now. There's a fair amount of graphic design and illustration-based work. So it could be video animations. It could be things that are more towards, like, product marketing. It could be it's a vast range within graphic design and illustration. So
sure.
Within our program, they're really being taught a skill set. And the instructors that we have are extremely versatile. And they're meeting the students with the content and teaching them the skills and helping them figure out how to, like, expand and really see where they can take that skill set. When we say graphic design and illustration, it's not limited to, like, marketing. It could be more artistic, creative, research-driven in the ways that we think about traditional arts. So there's this beautiful, like, fluidity to design. You might have traditional paintings on canvas. There are ceramic functional objects like teapots and platters and mugs. There's sculptures. There's drawings. So lots of mixed media, like where they're working in painting and drawing, or they're classified as multiple things.
When I think of museums, I think of the traditional paintings on canvas, but there's so much more, and this exhibit sounds like so much more than just your traditional paint on canvas.
Absolutely. I think that that's one thing about the arts right now in general, is that it's growing, it's changing, it's evolving, and the more technology we encounter as human beings, the more that goes into all parts of our life, right? So there's no reason why it wouldn't start to work its way into the arts. It's been there for a while, but I think it's challenging the ways that the museums think about their own collections, because people aren't making just traditional paintings and marble sculptures anymore.
Francisco Souto, director of the School of Art, Art History, and Design, will be presenting awards in an online presentation via Zoom. He's been the recipient of several awards himself over the last year for his own work. Tell me a little bit about that.
Francisco, we're very fortunate to have him as one of our longstanding faculty members, and he recently became our director. So he taught printmaking and drawing for years, and then became an administrator. So he recently received quite a few high accolades as an artist in his own right. We wanted to have some kind of celebratory experience for these students, because we don't want them to feel like they're missing out on something, you
sure.
know? So we're just having to reformulate how we think about that. So we're going to continue until we can go back to in-person experiences.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue to do this, I guess, in a virtual capacity. So that means a Zoom reception.
I tell you what, talking to a bunch of artists in 2020, the theme of the year is the show will go on.
Yes.
I've been talking with Patricia Davis about student artwork displayed online by the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Work by 18 graphic design students and 10 studio art students will be available online. Patricia, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you so much, William.
To learn more, head to the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. You're listening to Friday Live. I'm William Padmore.
I'm Genevieve Randall. Stay with Friday Live for a look at a Jim Henson exhibition in Omaha. That's coming up in about 5 minutes. Nebraskan Deb Carpenter Nolte expresses herself in a number of ways. She's an author, poet, storyteller, songwriter, performance artist, and teacher. Here she is reading one of her poems and singing one of her songs.
Ravens and crows have always fascinated me. They show up in literature and legend and have many names in relation to their grouping. A murder of crows, a congress or conspiracy of ravens, an unkindness of ravens. I've even read references to story of ravens or memory of ravens, most likely regarding their ability to maintain generational memories. So the first piece that I would like to present is called The Omen. And I wrote it several years ago when I was in a toxic relationship. The Omen. His words of righteous judgment and scorn blast through the upstairs bedroom window screen and scatter like shot into the night. She's thankful it is summer, grateful that his cruel utterings disperse into the dark where they can hurt no one. Relieved those midnight words are not ricocheting and reverberating within the four walls to stop only when they find her heart. At dawn, she escapes her bed to walk in that magic shadow between bleakness and daybreak. Feeling obsidian eyes on her, she glances toward the second story window to see if he is watching her path. One hand flies to her mouth like a bent wing when she spots it. But what is it? Black, shiny, unnatural. The body of a crow, high in the tree outside the bedroom window, claws clinging to a branch, hanging upside down, wings spread, and resignation and death. Her other hand comes up to mirror its mate. These hands, her broken wings, grasp for each other and cover her stifled scream, then fold in supplication, fearful in her knowledge. The second piece is more current. I'm an instructor at Western Nebraska Community College in Scotts Bluff and was preparing to teach a survey course of British literature. At the time, I had an opportunity to use some grant money from the Sherwood Foundation as part of a catalyst group I was in, and I decided to travel to England. I was familiar with the Tower of London ravens and the legend that if the ravens leave the tower, the crown and Britain will fall. When we were in England, we saw ravens all over the place and in significant places that we stopped. And when I came home, I wrote this ballad. Throughout our travels, we'd become very aware of the efforts of those outside of the United States to clean up the environment. So this song has more to do with taking care of the earth than being specifically about the tower legend. I feel that part of a poet's responsibility is to reflect on social ills and to be the harbinger of those truths. So this song is also about a toxic relationship. Mankind and our world, and I call it When the Ravens No Longer Fly.
Carpenter Nolting performing her song When the Ravens No Longer Fly. Before that, we heard her read her poem, The Omen. Deb lives in Bushnell with her husband, Tim, who is also a poet. They are blessed with a blended family, live in a renovated horse barn, and share a dog, two cats, a miniature horse, 22 hens, and a rooster. The late creator of The Muppets, Jim Henson, is featured in a touring exhibition of his work that's in Omaha right now. Next year on Friday Live, KVNO's Corbin Hirschhorn has more about the exhibition.
Going on now at the Durham Museum, a tribute to one of the world's greatest puppeteers. The Jim Henson exhibition, Imagination Unlimited, explores Jim Henson's groundbreaking work for film and television and his transformative impact on popular culture. Jessica Bremer, Director of Communications at the Durham Museum.
So our current exhibition on display is called the Jim Henson Exhibition, Imagination Unlimited. It comes to us from the Museum of the Moving Image in New York and is put on by the Jim Henson Company. And it's basically exactly like it says. Jim Henson was a groundbreaking producer, film, television, probably best known for things like The Muppets and Sesame Street, but had many, many projects that he worked on in his lifetime. So this exhibit really is kind of beginning to end of his life and all of the creative projects that he worked on and was able to bring to life, whether on stage or on screen. We have tons of his personal effects. So storyboards, handwritten notes. You really get to see the creative process that this man went through. And then of course we have many of the puppets on display too, which are the popular, definitely the popular part of the show.
The exhibition goes beyond just the puppets, showing behind the scenes of the artist through sketches, storyboards, scripts, and photographs.
Well, I think unless you're someone who is, you know, a Jim Henson expert. There's probably something to learn in this exhibit for everyone. I know personally myself, you know, my childhood was really impacted by the Muppets and Sesame Street and Fraggle Rock, but I hadn't heard of a lot of his later in life projects like The Dark Crystal or Labyrinth, or there are projects from early on in his career before anyone knew who Jim Henson was. There's incredible footage of some of these things. So there's lots of video in the exhibit too that really kind of immerses you in his process. But I think the thing that's been most surprising to us is just the wide appeal it seems to have. We host traveling exhibitions all the time, and there is something about this one that just seems to hit home with everyone. And I think it is because a lot of people have that personal tie to one part of his work or another.
The Jim Henson exhibition is open at the Durham Museum until January 10th. For more information, go to durhammuseum.org. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirschhorn.
Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black with Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show. That's at netnebraska.org/radio. Portions of Friday Live are pre-recorded. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Carrie Meese, William Padmore, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall. Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Max Creek Winery, celebrating 20 years of winemaking in Lexington with a commitment to sustainability. Max Creek offers wines, hard cider, craft beer on tap, and patio seating overlooking the vineyards. With weekend hours and curbside delivery, maxcreek.com. Support for programming also comes from Union Bank and Trust, with hardship loans and special considerations to help customers through these uncertain times. The people of UBT are here for Nebraskans and available by phone anytime. Member FDIC.